Blog Talk Radio. we'll just play this one. I'll be right back.
There is no ocean that can't be parted. There is no mountain that can't be moved. I know there's help for the heavy hearted. The weak will find their strength renewed. You just gotta have faith. You just gotta have faith. It's life or the shadow for all your tomorrow. If no one
Opposed? The ayes have it. This meeting is officially in order, and we will do our statement of faith. Let me put my glasses on. I don't know why my vision is more blurred than usual. Okay, our statement of faith, given by the inspiration of Elohim and is profitable for doctrine and for reproof and for correction, for instruction in righteousness, according to 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15. I believe that all holy men must be inspired and directed by the Spirit of Yah, according to 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 20 through 21. I believe there is one Elohim according to Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4. I believe that Yeshua is the manifest Son of Yah according to Luke chapter 1, verse 35. I believe I'm a new covenant child of Yah according to Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 10. I believe I'm of the royal priesthood according to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. I believe I am chosen and directed by Yah according to Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4. I believe I'm a child of Yah and of the seed of Abraham according to Galatians chapter 3, verse 26 through 29. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, according to Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. It is my whole duty to fear Yah and keep the commandments according to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. Let us give our Elohim a hand clap of praise on today. Hallelujah, Father. Thank you, Yah. We just glorify you, Father. We lift you up and we magnify your name. We extol thee, O Yah Elohim. We extol thee on today. And we bow down and we worship you, Father. And we ask that you would be in this meeting and that you would guide and direct our steps. And we thank you always, Father. Hallelujah. 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 Thank you, Father. Thank you, Yah Elohim. Our prayer for today is Psalms 133 for our scripture reading. Psalms 133. Verses 1 through 3. A song of degree by David. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head that ran down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard that went down to the skirts of his garment, as the dew of Hermon, as the dew that descended upon the mount of Zion. The mountains of Zion, for there Yah commanded the blessing, even life evermore. May the Most High bless you to read me here in the understanding and the doing of his word in Yeshua HaMashiach's precious name. Amen and amen. All right, we're going to start off this meeting with the reading of the minutes. And Sister Mary, let me load those. Yes, I did some corrections to them that I did not send back to you. I'm going to put it here on the screen. At least I think I am. Oh, yeah, I put them down here. You'll go ahead from there. Can you see the whole screen there? Okay. All right, who messed up my screen?
Not me. I'm reading off my face.
Somebody is. Mr. Denise, is that you? Okay. All right, Gordon, continue. Yeah, because you keep changing it. Somebody's changing it. It keeps popping back up to the top when I'm down here on the second page. Go ahead, continue. All right, I'll make a vote. Does anybody have anything to add to the minute? Between Sister Lorraine or Sister Denise? Okay, then I'm going to make a motion that we approve the minute as written and read. Do I have a second? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. The minutes are approved as read. And they'll be on file. Okay. First order of business for today that I want to bring up. I went through and I started trying to compile a complete price of what this is going to take us to do. With everything that we have. Well, let's talk about the logos first. I don't think I uploaded those. I sent out four logos. Let me see if I can get them uploaded. Get them here. All right, hold on a second. Let me see if I can get those uploaded. Yeah, I remember where I put them. Yeah, it don't pay to get old. Can't disagree with that, that's for sure. Where the heck did I put those? In the glam, with all the glamping stuff, but that was crazy. This should have been today. All the other stuff I did. I turned these into pictures, but where did I do with them? Give me a hot second, I'll find it here. Hold on. I'm doing different folders. Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can upload the. Example number one. Example four. And all of these I sort of threw together like in 5 minutes. So, and as I was playing around, all right, example one, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually have this made into a banner so that when I'm going to sell microgreens that, you know, people have something that they can see. So, you know, it's not just me out there hollering microgreens, but I will order the stand for this to go on. And it'll set up, you know, I'm thinking I'm just going to work from my truck as soon as I can find an appropriate place. So think of this as it'll be a logo that'll go also on the paperwork for the microgreen, but this is for that business. So, okay. So this was the first logo, and Sister Mary said she liked this logo. And then I believe Sister Lorraine said she liked this one. And I think you said this one as well?
Yes.
Okay. And then this one was just one. I didn't put the microgreens on it, but I needed to. I will find a place to put it on there, but... all right, so Mr. Denise, we haven't heard from you. Three and two. Okay, so Mr. Mary, you were, it seems like you're the only one that liked this one.
Yeah, I like number one and three.
Okay. So then... I made them, so I'm kind of impartial either way. It's going to be whatever the group decides. So what we want to do is you can only vote for one, okay? And I'm going to put up a survey. It's going to be one, two, three, or four. And whichever one you like the best, that's what you're going to put in the survey, okay?
What's the number?
This is, can you see the top of the screen? This is example one. Can you see the top of the screen for the whiteboard where it says example one? Right. Are you able to see that, Sister Lorraine? Okay. So this would be one, two, three, and four. So you vote for whichever one you like the best. You can only vote for one, though. Okay? and that'll be the one that we start off with. Yeah, I'm gonna put it in a poll right now. You have that on your screen now. Okay. And when you're done voting, just let me know.
I'm done.
Okay, we're waiting on Mary. Okay. Now, I'm going to show the results of the poll. I'm going to vote for number three because my vote won't go in here, okay? Poll result. Everybody voted for three. So three will be the one that we use. And so if you will record that, that would be three. So that order of business is done. And then I'm closing this stuff up and find where I'm at. I mean, it would be okay, did everybody see this in their in the email I sent you? You didn't see that? Should have been in your email. Okay. All right. This right here, and so that we have all on the same page and we understand what I'm doing and how I'm coming up with some of this stuff. I watched about 5 or 6 videos on septic systems. And you know, and then how they're installed and, you know, the pricing of them and what size you have to have for a particular, they do about a number of bedrooms in a home, okay? That's the term, what determines the size. And so for a 6-bedroom home, you would need a 1,500 gallon septic tank. And so I went ahead and went with a 2,000-gallon septic tank. Simple reason, I wanted a little bit extra capacity because we're going to allow inside the dome for the glamping, the couch is a fold-out couch, a bed. So that would allow that it actually is like 8 bedrooms. Will be not 8 bedrooms. It'd be like 2 bedrooms per dome. And so that really gives us a capacity of like at any given time, or the greatest capacity would be like 14 bedrooms. Because we have, I'm doing 7 domes, so we're going to say 12 bedrooms. And I'm going to tell you why I'm doing 7 domes versus 6. But the what I did was we see where it's 200 feet by 200 feet with the dome in the middle. The 200 feet by 200 feet is 1 acre of land. And what we're going to be doing is taking 40 acres and putting 6 tents on them. 6 domes, 7 domes actually, but the one dome we won't rent out. The one dome will be used for the on-site manager, whoever that is, whether it's me or somebody else. so that when, you know, when the domes get rented out and they got to be cleaned and all this kind of stuff, everything's got to be replaced. We really need somebody on site to do that. Okay, so I put in there for 7 domes, but that 7th dome would be used for the site manager. It would also be where we would store the replenishables and all that kind of stuff, the towels and all that, and cleaning supplies. And if there's, you know, somebody's got a problem, then the on-site manager would be responsible for addressing those things. Does that make sense? But, you know, their tent won't be as glamorous as far as having, you know, everything that the ones we're renting out. It'd be enough for them to survive on site, you know, because they can leave and, well, in my case, I could leave and go home or whatever and then come back. But, it would, you know, we'll have the kitchen and that kind of stuff in there, but the extra space, like let's say a living room space, we'll probably make it smaller, or we'll put storage bins in the bedroom, you know, to store, you know, the cleaning supplies and the extra towels and things like that. That makes sense. Okay. From there, so I have the acres. I went and looked and said, okay, if we did square acres, then 200 by 200, a 200 wide by 200 wide piece of land will equal 1 acre. And so we will put 1 tent per acre for, you know, six tents, total of 7. Okay. And with the dome and how we're going to build it out with the deck and all that in the middle. Now, these can be in a circle. They can be linear like this. Doesn't really matter. Okay, this is just for so that you can understand the concept. Okay? Now, we're going to have to give up, if I'm correct, if my calculations are correct. We're going to have to give up 3 acres of land for the leach field. And the leach field is where the septic lines run through. And you don't, you know, there's mixed views about whether you can grow stuff on top of this as far as, you know, anything like that. Anything that grows under the ground, like let's say carrots or beets or something like that, you wouldn't want to grow on, you know, on in this leach field. But anything that produces, you know, the fruit on top or the vegetable on top of the ground, or, you know, on a stalk, then you could probably use it for that. I haven't really determined whether we're going to use these 3 acres or not, or whether we're just going to, you know, throw flowers and stuff on top of it. And it just be, you know, because you can walk on it. You wouldn't want to drive on it. You wouldn't want to run a tractor across anything like that. You definitely wouldn't want to put a parking lot, you know, on top of it. So it becomes either, if it was going to be productive, then we could grow certain types of vegetables on top of it. I don't know if I want to take that chance or not. Or we just seed it over with flowers and, you know, that kind of stuff, grass and flowers. We can let it grow wild and still be, you know, something that still resembles the wild. And we don't have to really manicure it, you know, like go in and you know, mow it or anything like that. It would just be wild. But, you know, we wouldn't want to put trees in there, though, for the simple reason. Why wouldn't we want to put trees in there?
Because of the roots.
Right. Right. The roots would grow in through the pipe. And so that would not be good. Okay, but, you know, a little short shrubbery, flowers, things like that. You know, we just seed it, and then let it do its thing. If we get enough water in that area, especially if we do native type plants, then they're used to, you know, being watered the way nature wants it or the way nature provides. And we don't have to do it. So that's what this leach field represents, and that's 600 feet. And so this second slide right here, let me sort of reduce this. Can everybody still see that fairly well?
Yeah.
Okay. So these red lines represent the pipes coming from each of the tents, okay? The sewage lines coming from them. And so they would all connect into a main sewage line that would come off of the manager's dome. That's what I selected, okay? So the manager's dome, wherever it is, if we put them in a circle, then the manager's dome would be the one to the furthest right, because we would want the pipes, it would matter. We would want the pipes to have a kind of a downhill run to them, so that the sewage flow downhill. Okay, and it doesn't have to be a seat. I think for the pipes coming out of the tent, the grade on those, the pipe has to be angled 1/4 inch for every foot. So if you were 4 feet away, then the pipe should have from where the pipe started, it should have dropped 1 inch. Because 1/4 inch times 4 is what? 4/4, 1 inch. Okay, so the pipe would have to have dropped in elevation 1 inch. So then I would have to figure out, where this main pipe right in here, my drawing tool, how deep this pipe right here, and I'm drawing right there. Everybody can see that pipe coming from that tent, that example tent. That pipe right there, it would have to be, whatever they said that the depth of the septic tank has to be, then we would want, and I don't really think it's going to be an issue. I might be just making something up right here. But that pipe would be the deepest pipe, and all the other pipes would run to that pipe, okay? But as long as they slope, 1/4 inch for every foot, and I think that these are the furthest pipes are 200 feet away. So the deepest pipe would need to be 50 inches in the ground, slope. And so that would be part of, the engineering. But all the pipes would meet up here at this main pipe, and they would flow into this 200-gallon septic tank. The 200-gallon septic tank, all of these would connect into it, into the main pipe, and then they hit the main pipe and flow into that by design. And then the septic tank itself would be connected to, I think they call it a D-box, and that's where, and there should be another box on here, in between this leach field and the septic tank to the right. This is where all of these different pipes connect into in the leach field. So the straight lines going out from the septic tank, those are the leach field pipes, and those are the pipes that the water, when it overflows out of the, when the liquid overflows out of the septic tank, and that's your bad water. The solids are supposed to remain in the tank. So anything that doesn't float is supposed to remain in the tank. Does that make sense? Okay, and then, you know, the anything that floats, your liquid and stuff, it will overflow and go into the other pipes, okay? And those pipes are underground, and they go out, and then they sort of leak into the ground. And so the bad water leaks down into the ground, and then the ground, there's, you know, it's like sand or gravel up under the pipe, and then the water leaks into that, and it starts filtering, you know, the sewage out of the water. Does that make sense? And then it goes into the ground, where the ground continues to filter it until it gets back into the natural water table. By the time it gets back into the natural water table, the ground will have filtered out all of the sewage stuff. That's the way a septic tank works. So for the amount that we have, and I base this on 7 bedrooms, which is why I went with the 2,000 gallon. 6 bedrooms requires 1,500 gallon septic tank. And so I went ahead and did a 2,000, which would account for the manager's tent. And this would handle the sewage for that many tents, this size system. And so we would lose 3 acres to this leach field. And I think the water table in Arizona, up where we're at, I think the water table, the minimum is 400 feet, but I think that they're like, I think the wells and stuff, I think the water table has dropped so much that they have to deal like a 1,000-foot well to reach the water. So this water would have to seep down 400 to 1,000 feet before it actually entered back into the natural water table. Okay, whereas in places where I looked at and the way these systems are designed, the water table could be only 5 or 6 feet below this, spread out enough to where the water is clean enough to go back into the water table. So if you've got to go down, you know, between 400 and 1,000 feet, it should surely be clean if they're only requiring, you know, that the water table be 5 or 6 feet below that. That makes sense? Okay. So this is the system that I designed based upon what I saw from all the videos that I reviewed. And the piping on this, because the pipes have to be 4 inches, they have to be 4-inch pipes coming out for the sewer, coming from the toilet and, you know, the sink and kitchen sink, and but not be 4-inch pipes coming from the kitchen sink, but it's usually a 4-inch pipe coming from the toilet into the main, the main. So the main is a 4-inch, and then your pipes coming from, you know, the tub, and the sink will be probably 2-inch to that main. But the main one coming out of the house has to be 4 inches. And then all the pipes going into the septic system and into the leach field have to be 4-inch pipes. So priced all that out and included it in our cost to do this project, because we're going to have to put in all of this. All right, amen?
Amen.
All right, so anybody not understand this concept? Any questions? Okay. All right. I didn't say it yet. I don't want to give you no sticker shock. Let's go. Let's get this. All right. We looked at. And I will give you the price for all this. You have it already. You just ain't looked at it yet. Everybody. All right, so we looked at this. You guys looked at this layout before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and again, this is just a example. I just wanted to make sure everything would fit and how we would, you know, have to do it. We probably got a little bit more space than what's represented on here. But I think I was in a frame of mind of a 26 foot when I did this, and then I tried to redo it for 29 feet dome. But, you know, if it'll fit into a 26, it'll fit into a what,
29?
Okay. And question came up about putting the jacuzzi on the inside. And the only way that we can put the jacuzzi on the inside is if it was built into the all-in-one. Because the bathroom set is an all-in-one. Okay, just like the kitchen is. Like we saw that the kitchen, the sink, and the stove and all that was an all-in-one unit that you just installed. The bathroom is the same way. It's all-in-one, and so the drain for it is inside the all-in-one unit. And it's on this picture, the drain for the shower would be in the shower. They had some units that the drain, the shower, there was no split between the shower and where the toilet's at. It's just a drain there, so you sit down on the toilet, you do your business, the shower is right there. And, you know, so the whole bath wet. This particular one that I thought was the better one, it had them split out so that the shower was separate from the toilet and the sink area. And so the drain for the shower would be separate from the drain for the sink and the toilet. So the whole bathroom, you know, where the sink is at and where the toilet is at wouldn't get wet. There's a door there. And only the shower area would get wet. Now, we could opt for a small, if we did the smaller one, which it was the original one that was selected, where the shower and the sink and the toilet really are in the same enclosure. Let me pull those up. Let me pull that up so we can see it in more. So a picture of what worth a thousand words? So, yeah, let me just pull those up and share my screen. Bathroom. Okay, let me share my screen. You will go ahead and pull that up. And let me know when you have it. Oh. It should be there now. I had to click it. Thought I had.
Am I rubbing off on you, brother?
I am, apparently so. Nah, that's just me. Can't blame that on nobody but me. Got it now?
Right.
Oh, okay. So this is all the one that I selected. I'll bring up, I'll show you
can
the
I-
other one. Okay, so this is how it looks up close. take that down a little bit. Yeah, it's not getting smaller. So you got two kind of styles here. On the left is the style that I prefer. Everybody see that on your screen? Can you bring it up some? You can bring your screen up. You can't bring the... Let me see if I can make this... No, tomorrow I try to zoom out. Let me see if I zoom in. I just get too big. And do something. Okay, you can see where you got the shower and you got the toilet, you got the sink, right? On the one on the left. But then the one on the right, you see a toilet and you see what, the shower? So you would just jump in there and you would shower, but you would also be getting the toilet wet. And so I didn't really particularly care for that. I didn't care for it. It's cheaper for sure, but I just didn't care for it. Let me go back to there. So that's what they got on sale. I wanted to look at the one. Or there was something that it said to click on, and it took you to all the different models. Let me see if I can find that. Bathroom. There'd be a link here that says, oh, here it is, bathroom catalog. So these are the different models that they have. And I think this one at the top left is the one that was originally selected, something similar to this. Which, you know, it's functional and it would suffice. But something about showering and then getting the toilet all wet and all that just didn't sit well with me. So I chose more so
more privacy.
Yeah. So it would be this one on this page, the LD809. So, it, you know, you got a separate shower door there, which means you would have a separate drain. And, yeah, we would have to plumb for that. But if we put a jacuzzi inside, the problem with putting a jacuzzi inside is you have to add to the flooring because you need a drain for you need a way to fill up the jacuzzi. You need a way to drain the jacuzzi. And then when people get in and out of jacuzzi, you know, they're not going to be careful.
Right.
They're going to jump out and there's going to be a whole lot of water that goes on the floor. And so the floor would have to be designed such that, you know, I would think that we would either have to put in some type of a different type of flooring where it would have a drain in the floor. And then you need vapor, you know, you need vapor barriers. You need, it would add significantly to it. But if you put it on the outside, then you don't necessarily have to worry about that. And most jacuzzis go on the outside for that reason. But the added expense of, you know, preparing the floor, and you don't want to get mildew. You don't want, you know, you got to put in bigger exhaust fans to take out the moisture that goes in the air from the jacuzzi. So there's got to be an exhaust fan in here anyway, and I'm, you know, but you have to put in a bigger one because Any moisture that goes anywhere, you want it to evaporate and then leave out. You don't want it going into the walls. You don't want it going into the floor. Okay. And so that's one of the reasons that I put the jacuzzi on the outside. But then you don't have to worry about all that. Okay. And even in the wintertime, people who use jacuzzis will go outside and use them in the winter because the water is what? Hot? And so because the water is hot, then you can be in the jacuzzi and outside in December. And it can be, you know, close to freezing outside. Because when you get out, you got to hurry up and get inside. But anyway, that's the bathroom that I selected to go in, so we can vote on that. That's different than, you know, the one that Lorraine originally picked. Whatever page that's on. Let's see the next page. Yeah. Okay. So, then going back, I'm going to stop sharing my screen. But everybody got the gist right?
Yeah.
Okay. And does everybody understand why we would, what the pros and cons of putting a jacuzzi on the inside? It is most of the time, but you can, you know, they got like the, what they call them, whirlpool tubs that act like a jacuzzi. But the still thing, you know, it, even if it is, if it was built into the all-in-one, that would be one thing.
Right.
Because the tile and everything is designed for moisture.
Right.
But the flooring and stuff out here, not that we couldn't put it in, but it would add significantly to the price. I mean, you know, I can price it out, but, you know, we would either have to put tile, you know, tile the floors in the bathroom, seal them, seal the walls and everything else, and put a separate drain and the plumbing in on the outside. And slope the floor so that the water would, actually the floor would have to be sloped probably from two angles so that the water would run to the middle of the floor, wherever the drain is at. And then because you wouldn't want the water to just sit there, you would want it to run toward the drain. And so, you know, the floor would have to be done that way. My concern, again, would be I know people are not going to be careful. They're not going to be, you know, they're there to have fun or relax or do whatever. They jump in the hot tub, they jump out. They're going to bring, you know, the average person jumping out of a hot tub brings a gallon of water with them. So a gallon of water on the floor, that's a lot of water. You know, and so it would need to drain off quickly, and I wouldn't want to put it on the guests. You know, they're not going to mop it up. So some might, but most probably would not. I wouldn't even want to leave it to them. Okay. So the jacuzzi is optional if we put it on there. What we need to be looking at is we want to draw people to choose our site. If they got a choice and if they got to go, you know, if they got to choose a path, then we would want them to choose the path. If they're going to the Grand Canyon or if they're going to Sedona, Arizona, which is another, you know, tourist site, if they're going to Meteor Rock Crater, or if they're going to the There's another, the Petrified Forest. All of those are within, I think the furthest away is the Grand Canyon. But the rest of these are within 2 hours of the land. Grand Canyon is about 4 hours away. But, you know, people go and stay at the Grand Canyon a day and they come back. Most people don't stay overnight in the Grand Canyon. Some do. If they do, then they're usually going to try to get, what, accommodations in the Grand Canyon. But if they're coming to visit and they're staying or they're going to see the Grand Canyon, then they will stay outside of the canyon, drive to the canyon, spend the day, and then drive back out. And so this would be kind of, all of these would be tourist attractions that we could put down that are within, you know, a couple of hours drive from there. And then, you know, I'm sure there are others, lakes and things like that, that we would put in the brochure as far as, you know, as marketing material. Okay, but what we want is to get them to use our site versus someone else's, or going to the closest town and saying, okay, let me get what an Airbnb there. The people that you're going to attract glamping are people who like to camp, but they want convenience too. Okay, and that's the experience that they're looking for. They want to camp, but they want convenience. Okay, so this will work the way, you know, that this is designed. And again, this is just a example. Wanted to make sure everything worked, everything would fit. I don't really care for the coffee table there and having people have to move it, you know, to pull out the bed, but hey, as long as it's not too heavy a coffee table, that shouldn't be a problem for them to do. But everything else, you know, the chairs and stuff, we could add a chair to the bedroom. I didn't put one in there. The chairs around the kitchen table, I didn't put those on there because I know they'll fit underneath and what have you. The AC unit that I have on there, it is a split. It's called mini split. It's not the freestanding one that's on the floor, because all AC pull moisture out of the air, and it'll, you know, it'll gather in the tank in the all-in-ones. It'll gather in the tank, and then the tank will have to be empty. Okay, but with these, or I guess I could drill a drainage. The tank may have a small hose that comes out of the tank and maybe could go into drill a hole in the floor and let it drain out that. But these units are these, what they call mini splits. It's the heating and the AC in one unit, actually two. You've got an outside unit and an inside. And but the water drains by the unit. So it's already outside the tent, so you don't have to worry about that. And then, you know, price-wise, they are comparable, and I think they deliver more than the standalone unit. Yes. You can actually make your AC unit like a window unit. You can make it do heating or AC. Okay, so these also do the same thing. They'll do heating or they'll do AC. Just depends upon what you put them on. You know, so the, you know, whoever is in the staying there, they would pick, you know, what temperature they want. And I think that he's supposed to have a way that you can set them to automatic.
Right.
And so, depending upon what temperature you selected, then the heating will come on or the AC.
Yes.
Okay. And the capacity is a capacity that's high enough to heat the whole dome or cool the whole dome. So whether they leave a bedroom door open or the bathroom door or what have you, the wall that I have between the kitchen and the between the kitchen and the living room, I have that as a half wall and not a full wall. So, you know, it makes the space look bigger, or it should make it look bigger, because you're not, you know, you don't have a wall going from the roof to the, from the, you know, from the floor to the ceiling. You've got like a 4-foot wall there. It'll come to the top of the counters. And so you can see into the kitchen, or you can see into the living room from the kitchen. You can see into the living room from the living room, you can see into the kitchen. It just makes the space look bigger. But the wall, from, you know, for the bedroom are full walls. The wall for the wall between, let's say, the couch and, the, you know, the back of the couch and the bedroom is a full wall. And so it'll be a full wall between the, you know, the living room and what, the bathroom. And a full wall between the bedroom and the bathroom. That way, if you don't, you know, if you don't, if it's not a couple staying, if it's a couple, then it's not a problem. But if it, let's say it's two couples, well, they want to split the cost, they, both of them are going to want what, privacy? And so, you'll have semi-privacy in the living room, you have full privacy in the bedroom and in the, what, the bathroom. And if it's two couples, then they're going to come out, if they're going to come out of the bedroom, just have to announce themselves, hey, I'm coming out, whatever. Whatever you're going to do. And I didn't want to make the bedrooms, I didn't want to actually put them back to back. Or else, well, we're really going to have to put some soundproofing in there. Because when people go to getting busy, you don't know how loud they are or whatever. You don't want to be hearing it through the walls. But you might. Either way it goes, I was trying to make it to where there's some semblance of privacy. You know, because we don't know, and we can't say, if we say it sleeps four, then two couples could come. A couple with their children could come. So the bathroom has to be what? Where you can seal it from both ends, from the bedroom and from the living room. And, you know, you can lock the doors, you know, you can go in, take care of your business. Don't have to worry about somebody walking in on you, what have you. So that's the reason why I sort of went with this design. Everything works, it fits. But again, like I said, you know, we can do it. It can be done differently. This is just me playing around and making sure that, you know, with the items that we selected, if they will work, if they would fit. And so it doesn't show the cabinets like in the kitchen. You know, the cabinets where we would be able to put them on the top and the bottom, it doesn't show those. And even in the bathroom, I don't have it there, but I can move the wall and put, you know, a cabinet for what, towels and soap, that. So we have a little bit of room to play with. But that's just a suggestion. I didn't put in the wood-burning stove. We got the electric fireplace. I think the electric fireplace puts out a little bit of heat. I don't think it would put out enough to heat up the entire place, but the heating unit on the AC would take care of of all that. So the electric fireplace would be more so for show and ambiance type of deal. I think that's ambiance or aviance, however you pronounce that.
I have no idea.
But we know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Yes.
Okay. You know, just for mood, you settled in. You want the semblance of a fire. That your fireplace has the flames coming up. You know, they're not real flames, but they look like flames. So you can set your little romantic evening or whatever. Okay. Then we have the deck around that. I was thinking about, always in these designs and stuff, what I'm thinking about is the architecture and the engineering, the plumbing, the electrical, where would all that go? Because we wouldn't want to hang the electrical from the tent, from the dome. So there would be on this deck, there would be a fence around the deck. And probably on the back or the side, whichever, is going to be less intrusive, I would put the panel on the fence for the electrical. So that, you can have a fuse box there. You can have a fuse box there. Out of the fuse box, and all the wiring would run up under the deck and come up into the different, come up through the walls. And then so your electrical outlets would be on the walls. If we were doing any lighting, then it would probably come up through the walls, and we would have maybe some type of hanging light over the bed, or we could have just lamps, on the nightstand. But probably would want a light that hung over the bed that would provide, and over the couch that would provide overall lighting to the entire room. But that, again, that just comes when we'd have to make that decision. But anyway, you guys have already seen this, and so that's the rationale behind everything. And of course, either we make the master bedroom. I think we would make the living room where in that dome where you had the curtain at, so that when you're looking outside. Or we would include the type where the top part of the dome is clear, so that you can still see the night sky at from the bedroom or from the living room. I think we can tell them however we want that. So we could probably make the top part of the dome clear, and then one of the sides clear. Maybe where the living room is at, or the bedroom where it's where is that? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Talking about this type of dome, they're basically the same. You see this curtain right here? Oh, can you guys see that first? Because I'm not sharing my screen anymore. And now you guys go ahead and pull up screen sharing. See how the big window is in front? And you got the curtain? depending upon what design we got. I don't know if they make that. Maybe we can ask them to make it with this on two sides. So you have it in the living room and you have it in the master bedroom. A view like this. This window is designed to look out of your most scenic side. So the way this land is shaped, and we would probably want all of the major windows, the big windows like this, to face toward the east, because then they get a view of the valley, they get a view of the mountains from that view. If they look to any other side, then they would see wilderness, but they wouldn't get a real big wide view like this, like they would out of the east side. Okay, so whether we put a window like this in the master bedroom or if we put it in the living room, whichever one of those is, we would have to decide, you know, which way. If we only put one in, then I would say that the view from the master bedroom would have this view. But you know that's open for debate. But I would think that the master bedroom, then I would think that would be the one. But we could put it with the living room as well. In the master bedroom, doesn't have to worry about a curtain and privacy. So it all depends, but I think that you can get these custom made because when you order them, you tell them how you want them made. So we could say, hey, we want one of these, you know, we want this clear view in 180 so that, you know, the living room and the other side, the living room on the other side, we would have the option to open up and so that the people could see, you know, if they have a sleeper couch and they're still looking at outside. Or I think what I would rather have is, let's see if they got it on here. I definitely like that view, but I would like one with I think they got it where you can extend that view. I wouldn't want it clear like this all the way around. Let's see. I'm going to stop that. You can get this. And I could be wrong, but we can check. Come on. I'll put my mouse over it. I think you can get this. You see how this window is actually on this back one is higher than this one? And I think you can actually get it to go up higher. You can order it to where they can make this clear part go up even higher. And so, or you can make it maybe to where only the top is clear. So this part up in here is clear. That way, when you're laying in bed, then you're looking at the stars. I think there's different ways that you can get this configured. But you know. At that time, we can make that decision. All right, so let's add. This is just the overview, the cost of everything. I have it in a spreadsheet that has everything broken out. That's the sort of range provided, and then I sort of had it to combine and include stuff. In one sheet so that I can have everything at a glance. But if I want to get details, let's see, does that increase that it did? I don't want to. All right, can you guys still read that? Let me stop sharing. Yeah, it's the Dome Tent Glamping Camp Store. Okay. And Sister Denise, Sister Lorraine, are you able to see that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so what I did was, you don't never know when something's going to go off sale. So it's on sale now, but by the time we go get it, it may not be on sale. Okay, so I don't want to use those prices for planning. If we were buying right now, then that would be different. And we could say, so we'll have to look at what the current price is whenever we go to do this and then price it out according to that. But for planning purposes, I did not use sale price, okay? Because we don't have a guarantee that, you know, we'll get it for that sale price. So the total for the 26.9 tent was $26,591 for that dome. And that's not with any furnishings or any plumbing or any electrical, that's just the dome. That's not even the deck. Okay? The dome. Then the total with the furnishings was another $17,000 for furnishing. You know, putting in the furniture, if we did everything, another $17,000. But that brought it to $43,000, this price right here. Everybody see that? Okay. And then the price for seven domes came out to $303,000. Okay, and $96. Then we have to add, we've got to add electricity to the site. So that's $25,000 solar panels. Because we have to have enough electricity to run all seven domes. And then we wanted the water, and we wanted the water atmospheric generator. Okay, and that is another $60,000 for that. Maybe able to get it cheaper, but that's what it is right now. I'm thinking if I went to them, I could get it cheaper. Then the septic system was $24,600. And that's with the piping, and that's mainly piping. Okay. And then I included the land in there because we want to pay, if we're going to refinance, then we might as well refinance and pay the land off from the original debt. Because once we pay it off, then we have options to do other things that we don't have right now. Pay it off, if we refinance the land, with what I own that particular land right now, then it allows us to split the land, split the 40 acres into six. So we could have six or 7 acre parcels rather than 40 acre parcels. And we could split it up and do more with the land. So I want to have that ability because then we start off, if we start off with the 7 tenths, then when we split the land, then we have the option to add more tenths, more domes to the land. And when we look at this price, it's for everything, $456,526. That's the furnishings, the electricity, the water, everything. This is what we would be going to get financed, okay? Don't let that price, don't let that be sticker shock to you for what we're trying to do. For the simple reason, as I said, one house alone if we were doing a house, if we were doing a decent-sized house, we would come out to half that price. But we're doing seven domes. So let me put that up there. Let me put up this to show you what we have to do. And it's just a... Okay. So I went out and looked at if we got to sign it. And if we put 10% down, I went to the VA and reapplied for my, what they call certificate of eligibility, because VA loans are 0% down. I don't have to put anything down with them. And if I was going to do this, I would try to do it to my VA loan. But if we don't, the same, we don't get it, then we would have to put a minimum of 10% down. So we'd have to come up with 40-some-odd thousand dollars to have it financed. And the monthly payment would be $3,180. Now, if we're looking at the bottom line, $3,188 a month, if we go by our projections, then even if we were charging $300 a night, our monthly payment on everything is $3,100. If we rent it one-tenth for 30 nights in the month, the whole month, then that would cover our what? Monthly payment?
Yeah.
And if we rent it all 6 cents for 30 nights a month, then we would have nothing to worry about, right? Because we'd be making $54,000 a month. Our expenses would only be $3,188. I'm going to say about probably we would need a, you know, if we hired out to a cleaning crew, or whether we did somebody on site, we prefer we do somebody on site, but still, we still need to pay them something. So whether it's me or you or somebody else, we still need to be paid for the services. So I'm going to say if it was $200 a unit to clean it and that kind of stuff, then that would be part of that price. Okay. So... but it would not be a problem. Now, looking at the sites here in Arizona, the glamping sites here in Arizona, most of them are booked up solid. And they're not offering anywhere near what we're talking about offering. So I don't think once we do the proper marketing and we put it on Airbnb and one of the other am I still sharing my screen?
Yeah.
Where does that go? I want to stop sharing. Hold on. Oh, you're just looking at, I'm not sharing my screen, you're actually looking at the page. Yeah, so I'm not actually sharing my screen, okay. Okay. What was I about to do? Denise, you got to stop all that yawning now.
I know.
You're going to make me sleepy. I forgot where I was going. Anyway, I don't think that we would have a problem. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Another option that I have thought about and want to way that I want to also offer this is through timeshare. Timesharing. So under the time sharing, I think the simplest way would be that people purchase, they would prepay for a night or a week, however long they want to stay. And they would buy into that. And that would guarantee them their time. They could trade it. They could, you know, exchange. You know, they could rent it out to somebody else themselves. But they are purchasing, let's say that they purchase and they want a tent for a week. Then they do it through a timeshare. We're only going to have one site unless, you know, Yahtzee Fitting allows us to open up more than one site in the future. But we do it as a timeshare, and then rather than investing in Yeshuan Farms from the standpoint of trying to come and stay in the community, they could just rent or invest in the glamping site. And so they could purchase, let's say, a week at a time, and I'm sure that it would have to, I have to look and see how they do that for the normal time shares, but I'm sure it'd be cheaper than them renting it, if they rented it night by night, because they're pre-purchasing. So, they, you know, they say, oh, I want to pre-purchase for the first through the 4th of July. Whatever the summer rates are, then we would give them, for a timeshare, we would give them a certain amount of discount. Just, you know, just food for thought, but I'd have to make sure I understand how the timeshares are working and what makes them, you know, how do we work it to our advantage and make it work for them as well. But it's another option so that we can guarantee or try to guarantee booking. So we see the total price, and we see what we would need to do. To break even, we really need only one tent to rent for the whole month. We got everything covered. But, you know, that being said, if we had five tents, there's five tents rent for five nights out of the month, we have everything covered. If that makes sense.
Miles.
Yes, ma'am. No, the septic system was $24,600.
Okay.
That's the atmospheric water generator. That's how we get our water. You're welcome. Any questions? But any questions? Uh-huh.
Okay. We tied off
the dome itself is... The dome itself, with the furnishing, or by itself, is $26,591.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know what? I got that wrong. The dome itself is $14,675. With the furnishings, it would be
$26,000.
Yeah, I added the furnishings back in there again. But the that number's wrong completely. 14 and 17 is $31,000. So that's $12,000. So we can subtract $12,000 from this total price. So that would be 12, Everybody see my screen? You should see a spreadsheet. Okay. It's in a spreadsheet. You got down,
nah.
And its price was $12,890. Total price with everything was $25,522. And that's not with furniture. That's just the dome and the stuff that makes up the dome, the curtain, the door frame, the insulation, that kind of stuff. Okay. Then we said we were going to go with a 29-foot dome. That's 20. Here's a 29-foot dome. It's $14,675. Then you add those same things to it. But because you got more floor space, then the insulation has to be more. The wooden door frame is going to be the same, and the curtain is the same. But because of the flooring and that kind of stuff, because we put in more flooring, then the total price came to $26,591 rather than. It's about $1,000 more, going from 26 to 29. Because it's 25, 52, 552 here, and then for the 29 foot, it was 26,000, about $1,000 more. But then with the furnishings, when we look at the furnishings, this was the price for the furnishings. And $15,000 some odd more dollars, $15,827. That's if we put in everything. But that's what that totals up to, $26,827. Add that into the price of the dome and everything. The dome and the furnishings came out $43,418. And then the price of seven domes would be $303,000. That's with the furnishings. Then we have the electrical to do with solar panels. We have the water. We have the septic. And then I added the land in there also. That all totals to $456,000. So the numbers are right. And we are quiet. You have the sheet. I sent them to you. You got to know what to add up, okay? But you got the same spreadsheet. I sent it to you. Yeah, it's in the same email. But you're not adding from here to here. You're not adding this stuff right here. That's not how this goes, okay? You're adding this column, this figure right here. Can you see where it highlighted? This figure. Those are the things that you're adding. Because this is the total for, like I said, I didn't use the sale price, the on-sale price, the actual price. And then these are the individual, these are the prices for the individual. Seems like I could actually do this. Now everything adds up that way. So everything is in one column. Right, that column, let me change this right here. Does that make better sense to you?
Yeah.
No. Right, that gives you 43. That's why I just put, if you look at the formula, I don't know if you can see that up. Can you see the top of this page where I got this highlighted up here? Okay. So I'm taking the total from dome to the 18, which is 26,591, and I'm adding furnishings to C94. So I'm going to the furnishing sheet number 2. So let me escape out of that so it doesn't change anything. So here's the furnishing sheet number 2. So we're taking the total of the for the dome. That would be this all the stuff right here. That's 26,591. So from here to here equals 26,591. Everybody understand that? Okay. And then we go to furnish this sheet right here, and this is column C, 94, That's the sale, 94. It says $16,827. That's the total of the furnishing, okay? So I'm telling you to get this number and add it to this number, and that comes up to the 43,418. Does that make sense? So we're just taking the total for the total for the dome and everything that goes into it, the flooring and the doors and the insulation, and then adding the total furnishings to that. And that's what the total dome will cost us, minus what, the electricity and the water and the septic, because all those things have to be put in. You can't put out houses out. Now, if we didn't provide anything electrical, we wouldn't have to do what, electrical? But we cannot get around the water in the toilet, because the CCNRs for the land say you can't put an outhouse on it. If you want it to, you couldn't do it. You have to, if you have toilets on the land, they have to be flushable. No, flushable. So you have to put in the septic system, and you got to put in water. So we'd have to do those. If we took out everything electrical, we still have to do septic and water. So I don't think we want to take out the electrical stuff, though, so... If we took out everything electrical, then we would be taking out, what, the AC?
Yeah.
We'd be taking out the stove.
Yeah.
We'd be taking out all lights. The refrigerator. Yeah, we'd be losing a lot of things. Open for discussion. Okay, got to do what we got to do. Any other comments? Who feels like it's too, who feel like it's too much? We got to be honest now. Okay. Sister Lorraine, you awful quiet over there. Part again? I thought I heard something different than what the last part said. And I think that income is on the low end, because I think we can, I think that if we put everything that, I really believe that if we put everything that we're talking about putting in there, that we really can ask for over $400 a night, and we would get it. I put $300 because it's still, what, good income? Even if we did $200 a night, we would still be making, what, good income? But the market will bear three easily. And from all the sites that I looked at that offer anything close to this, we can get $425 a night easy. So we'll start off with three, and then we will gradually, what, go up? But, you know, the thing about spreadsheets, which is what I originally projected. See the difference in the income there? Rather than $54,000, if we did 6 cents for 30 nights, we'd be making $76,000. And if we did 36 cents in a month, but we're not doing 36. But the yearly income would be almost $1 million. Right. I mean, where's our break even? We're talking about 400 and some odd thousand that we're financing. If we rented all 6 cents, 30 days a night, 30 days, you know, all 6 cents every night, if we kept them booked, then we would more than be able to, we could be able to pay this off in, what, 6 months? Because if we charge $425, then the yearly income, let's see if I have part change, the yearly income would be $918,000. We would only be financing $450 or $60,000. We could actually pay this off in a year, and then some. But we wouldn't want to put ourselves up under that kind of pressure. But if it happened, it would happen. But I really I really believe, let me put it back at 300. If we want to, you know, we'll go up to 425 maybe in year 3 or 4. So each year we will go up by $25 or something like that. But if we were making this kind of money, and this would make the price comparable with the average, and we're going to be offering above average, where we're very profitable. So 600, rather than almost $1 million. We'd make a little bit over. We still make enough to what? Pay off everything the first year? Even at $300. Plus, and still have a surplus of over $200,000 or close to $190,000, something like that. We can live with that. But that still allows us to do what? Do what we want to do, which is to take it and finance where we're actually going to be living at. That's the whole goal of this. So we wouldn't take everything out of it. We'd leave some for maintenance and that kind of stuff, but then we go back to the bank and say, now we want to finance this. And we're going to use the income off of this. Then we would be able to do everything that we wanted to do, the way we wanted to do it, everything that I know we're going to need in place, and we would be able to do it from the income from this and pay everything off. So we might finance whatever, but we would still take the income from this and maybe expand this. maybe expand this. And because we're really, right now, we're really planning and governing everything off of 6/10. But if we split up the land, like I said, then we could actually put a total of 36 cents. Then the annual income is $3.8 million. And I don't think that we would have a problem keeping that field. We'd have a name by that time. And putting up 36 tents or domes, that's a full-time job for two or three, four people. So, you know, somebody in the community could do it, and we pay them for that. They can donate back to the community, or they can put it in their pocket, whatever. Or it goes back into the communal fund, and it's split amongst everybody. Because that's where we had designed everything to begin with anyway. And we'll say, okay, we're paying X amount for somebody to do this. That goes back into the fund, but the community as a whole, what, prospers by it. So this just becomes those individuals' jobs. But the whole community prospers by it. Does that make sense? All right. While y'all being quiet, I'm going to be right back. No, I'm going to go get some water. Okay, I'm back.
And there we go.
Oh, yeah, she said she had to go pay her water bill, right? Okay. So what you thinking, my sister Denise? Think it's doable?
Yeah, doable.
All right, amen. I know Sister Lorraine already said she thinks it's doable. Yeah, you know, so I think so as well. I don't think the price too high, considering what we're doing, because we got to bring everything to the land. You know, the power, the water, and everything. But I think that the sooner the better. I think that if we can get the financing, then construction-wise and what have you, everything could be done in 6 months or less. But it doesn't, you know, we're using deck. It doesn't take long to build a deck. It doesn't take long with the right equipment to put in a septic system. It can actually be done in a day. It doesn't take a long time to put in solar. It's the building of the dome. As you know, they have to be assembled. They don't come whole. That would be the biggest thing. But I think that even probably less than, you know, once we submit the plans, and I don't think we can get the plans for the domes until we actually buy them. They won't, you know, provide them. But we would have to pay for the domes, and they will provide us the plans for the domes. And then we submit for the permit. And the first thing that has to go in is, according to the Arizona, the septic system has to go in first. So we submit, you know, submit for the plans for that, have it done, or because I think that, yeah, I probably have to have that done. But then everything else, mostly, I and another person could do. But I wouldn't want to put the septic in, cover it up, because you cover it up until, you know, but the very ends of it, in the beginning. And if it's not right, then you got to dig everything back up. And so I wouldn't want to go through that. I'd rather just go ahead and hire the plumber and let them do it. And then while they're putting that in, let them bring it all the way to the termination point where we go into, you know, where the pipe would come up to the deck. And then from there, we would take. Build the deck, and the plumbing, rough in the electrical, do the solar. I think I might have
to. I would like to do something.
We ain't gonna be doing no hammering and banging. I have an air compressor. Now, if you can handle a nail gun or a socket,
I can learn how to.
Okay, I can teach you then. Because the nail gun and that stuff, it just makes it easier. And then a lot of the parts for the deck and stuff, we would bolt together. The thicker pieces, we wouldn't nail them, we would actually bolt them down. And then I haven't seen, Lorraine, when you were looking at those domes, Did you see anything that said how you seal them from the weather on the outside, like keep water from coming up underneath them? Mr. Lorraine? Yeah. Sister Mary, are you back? She wouldn't pay her sewer bill. She didn't go pay her water bill.
Yes. Right.
I'm sorry. Welcome back. All right. Sister Lorraine, do you remember them saying how those domes are sealed from keeping moisture from coming in the bottom?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Do you remember saying anything on those sites that said how those domes are sealed from keeping moisture from coming in the bottom?
No, I don't
like keeping the rain from coming in the bottom. I have to look. I don't remember seeing it. But, you know, that would be part of it. I would think that it, as a minimum, they'll have a way that you could bolt it down. But what you put in between, let's say, the deck and that frame, to keep moisture from coming underneath it, that would be, you know, if I had to buy a type of rubber and cut it to go in between it, that's, you know, I would find some way to seal it. But it would never be a problem. You know, if it rains or snows or does whatever, water wouldn't have a chance of coming underneath.
Well, I would think with all that,
I'm sure they do. I just don't remember reading it, how it is done. But there's got to be some type of barrier or something. I'd have to see how they anchor it to the deck. If I had to drill holes in the frame, then that's what I would do. And put screws through it, through the dome and the deck. Because the anchor I saw was like for when you go to the ground. That wouldn't work on a deck.
That wouldn't work?
No, that would not work on a deck. Let me look it up. Because that would work. Those anchors that I saw, the same thing you're thinking, it looks like a spike. Right. That would not work. I wouldn't use it. Let me see. I saw those too, but I think that they were saying to use that if you are anchoring it to the ground. Because it would just go over the edge. But that would mean that your deck would have to be the same size as the dome. That means you would have no place to put a chair or anything else on the outside. Does that make sense? Because your dome, the way they're saying, you would cut the deck even with the dome. But they don't have that, they don't have it like that in any of those pictures. Okay. Well, I would think that, and I would have to look at the actual floor part of the dome, the frame, that the part that touches the floor. And if nothing else, if they don't provide, because I think if they're talking about those anchors, then maybe you would have to anchor it, and then you use that anchor and then hammer those anchors into the ground up under the deck. So it would be like a wire that hooks onto the bottom of the deck, and then you hammer that into the ground. But if that was the case, I would not use that. What I would do is place the dome, and then I would drill holes in the frame and put screws to it. So let's say that the floor and the deck and the floor were a total of 4 inches, and I get 5-inch bolts here, you know, secure the deck to the frame, the frame to the deck. Which means you got to have the deck high enough that you can get up under it. And I would want to do that. I would want the deck to be at least 3 feet high. Because if you got to fix anything, electrical or anything, you got to be able to get up under it. So it'll all be worked out. But I would make sure that the decks are anchored and that I don't care what, if it's a 100-mile-an-hour wind, it ain't going nowhere. But yeah, I can teach you how to do all that stuff, Denise. If you want to get your hands dirty. I hear you, I hear you. So yeah, if you want to, we can make it happen. So the next thing would be to check on finance. So I need to call a couple of banks and find out how do we have to be structured as a group to apply as a group, to apply as an organization. To secure the loan or I don't know how long the VA, it would take the VA to redo my, what they call a certificate of eligibility, which allows me to get VA financing for, a home, a primary, I would say one of those domes would be my primary residence, and I'd be renting out the rest of them. And so they'll do that like as a multi-tenant home or multi, like you'd be doing a duplex or a quadplex, something like that. In that case, you guys would just be signing a statement saying that you'd be renting. And so I could show, that, I got the primary residence and I have people who are going to rent already. And then they would finance the whole thing. But, I have to go and look at and see how we have to do it, what's the best way to do it and the most economical way to do it. And then we would have to, structure the paperwork to make it work. That's probably what I'm going to start on tomorrow. And if anybody else wants to look into it, they can as well. And then we'll know what we need to do. Anything else? We're past time now. By about 30 minutes. Nothing, nobody got anything else?
Talking about that.
I don't know yet. I have to find out more about how the industry does it. So if, I think with the timeshare, and Mr. Lorraine, you can correct me on this, it's like you buy the unit, but you only get to use it a certain number of days out of the year. Right. My question would be on with the charging. So I know when I went on vacation last September when I had the heart attack, and they tried to tell me a time. They wanted me to actually, it was like I was buying, let's say a tent. Okay, I'm just going to use that as an example. So let's say the tent costs $41,000. I was buying that, but then I could use it. They had multiple sites, so I could use it anywhere in the world that I wanted. Under their system, they had, and they got together with other properties as well. So you could, say, oh, I want to stay in Puerto Rico. But because I had bought this one, it authorized me to stay anywhere in the world. All I got to do was go in there, and I think it was by point as well. But I'll have to look it up because I don't know what to charge at this point. Yeah, I would have to. I don't know if I kept the paperwork, but it was similar to that. But they had like a 500-page directory of different places you could stay all over the world. I think it was with Wyndham. Right. Yeah, I couldn't remember. I can't remember, all of the particulars. Yeah, what they offered me for like $50,000 or something like that. It was $50,000. You can get it. You finance like a home, but you could say, you get so many points, and then, but you could basically stay anywhere you want. Didn't limit you to. You might have bought at this resort or whatever, but you can literally stay wherever you want. I said if I wasn't doing the stuff with the land, I probably would have did that. Then you just go in, all you got to do is get there. What I would look at and we'd have to look and see what made sense for pricing. If we do timeshare, would make sense. Because we only got one site. We don't have multiple sites that we can offer anybody. So the only thing that they could be able to do is, we could say, hey, you can sell your week or you can rent your week, or whatever it is that they're buying. You can rent it out to whoever for whatever price you want to. This is what it's going to cost you. I mean, as a selling point. So let's say you had friends, you couldn't use it, but you had friends that wanted to use it, then they weren't friends. You went out on Craigslist and said, hey, I got a week at this place, and let's say it cost them, we're going to say $5,000, let's say $400 a night let's take this thing. We did $400 a night. For a week, that would be $2,800. $2,800 for a week. Let's say that if they time shared it, get them to do it, Maybe we offered it to them for $2,000. For what, $800 saving? If they pre-bought it for the week, that's their week. If they wanted to change for a week that was open, then yeah, we charge them a processing fee. $50, $150, whatever it is. Now you can change this week. But we have to, you know, we have to make it make sense. And I don't know enough. I'll have to go out and do some research. Is it like you own it? So it's like you bought it, whatever that package was, whatever that amount was, and then it's yours forever.
Yeah.
Right. But you only get it for a certain amount of time. What's the maximum amount of time that you can get it?
Okay. So I have
one where it is. I think the week would be fine. Now we would just have to figure out what we would start. Because if they I think it would be more than the cost of a week, though, because they would own it forever. So let me think about that. A week at $425 a night, $2,800, $400, 7 days, $2,800. And then I would probably want to multiply that by 30. So $2,800 times 30. So that would be 30. That's 30 years.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just, you know, I'm pulling something out my behind. But, you know, I'm thinking that that's probably the way this is designed. So, $2,800 times 30. That would be $84,000. That would be steep. So, I'll do some research, thinking that if we were doing timeshare and they were going to own it forever, and they were going to be able to pass it on, then it would not be something that, it wouldn't be cheap. Right, but what I base the price on that. So I know we're going to be selling 52 weeks. That means we would want to get, what, 52 investors for one tenth to buy, you know, a week at a time. But I'm saying, how much will we charge the individual for a week? Did that make sense to Lorraine? Right? Right, but that would be, I don't think you can get a timeshare for that amount, can you?
Oh, no. Well, you can.
Right. If they can pass this on to their children, if it's something that they, because they, what we're saying is you're actually buying this, but you only get to use it a week out of the year or whatever. But you can use it year after year, and you can pass it on to your children, and they can pass it on and extend the family. Then I would think that if you did 300 times 50, like you said, that's 15. But see, that 300 a week is not, that's 300 a night that we, so why would we give it to them for 300 a week? Yeah. We would literally be giving it away. That sounds better. So, yeah, I would say, does it make, you know, number one, I would say, does it make sense? Because the numbers have to, what, make sense for somebody to do it. Right. Yeah, I'll when I'm got a fresh brain, I will get up and delve into the Airbnb stuff. I can understand that. I got that concept down. I understand what they're doing. And it's just a matter of, you know, what the market will bear. You know, and what you're offering. And again, you know, the things, the videos that I've watched from people who are already doing this, all in the market. And then automation, because we would have to, you know, all the emails and stuff that you get when you rent a Airbnb, and, you know, emails to the renter, emails to the cleaning crew, you know, this person's checking in, make sure this place is ready, yada, 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 all that needs to be automated. And they have sites already that are set up for that are fairly cheap, like $35 a month, you know, for the service or something like that. And you go on and you set your automation so that when somebody rents from Airbnb, the email telling, giving them the instructions on, you know, what they're supposed to do, all that is pre-done. it just automatically goes. And then when, you know, everything is set, then here's the combination to the gate. Oh, I got to actually look up at the gate in. I think we can do that for about 15 minutes. But we want, you know, we want when people go to check in, they just punch a code in the gate. The gate opens up and they drive in. And then on each door, you know, they punch a code into the door and that's what gives them access to it. And from what I've read, those systems, the security on those systems is you can have it to where it's automated, so it changes the combination to the door every time. So once the stay is up, the system that it connects to automatically changes the combination to the door. And so you don't have to worry about them. Once their stay is up, you don't have to worry about them coming back and what kind of stay for free. Because they change the combination. They don't tell them what it is. It only tell whoever, you know, the new occupant. So you can make that automated so that once the stay is up and the combination to the door automatically changes. Check out, you know, certain time of the day it changes. They walk out, you know, they know checkout time is 3 o'clock. They walk out. Unfortunately, if they walk out and they don't get everything, then somebody's gonna have to come give them the rest of the stuff out of the room.
Right. Or they won't be able to come back in.
They won't be able to come back in. So I was going, you know, we'll hook it up to those systems so that, you know, the notification email, the email with the instruction, the email that gives them the combination, the system that changes the door lock, combination to the door lock, all of that would be automated. But we don't have to worry about it. And that would just be cost, you know, it would be a cost associated with running. But yeah, I've looked at all that. And that's easy enough to do. Okay, so I'll look at the time series and I will try to get a better understanding. It's okay if we price it right here, then if I look at what the industry is doing and figure out the formula that they're using, oh, they're charging, or I can just say, oh, for this type of system, you're paying $45,000 to buy in. You finance the $45,000, however long they pay cash for, they finance it. They get that week, you know, or they can change out their week. So that is going to average. This is what the average is that they would be renting this place for the week. And that as well, I'm thinking that, if I can remember correctly, since they're buying, it's like they're buying, then whatever the price is, once they paid it off, then it's not really like they're paying anything after that anyway, because it's theirs forever. So whatever the price is that we want to get, that's what we'd be asking for. Because if they were to rent it by the day after that, if they were to rent it by the day every year, yeah, that's what I have to sit down and play with it to see if it makes sense. It's like having a house that you go to that you paid for. When you were originally paying for it, it cost you something. But once you paid for it, then you can go stay at it for it free. Even though you paid the money up front or over the years for it, when you go use it, you know, it's not costing you anything that, but your transportation and whatever you're doing to go there. Right. Well, it's kind of because the property's got to be maintained. So they'll pay a maintenance fee. We'll see what that is. you know, we'll see what that what that's going to be. Maybe it's $100 a year or whatever. Because with all of them, with all if we, if, huh? Okay, so then if we said, you know, again, we got to make it make sense. But if we said it was 300, maybe 300, and let's do the number, let's do the math, okay? If we said it was $300 a year, and we the max amount of people that we could rent it out to a year would be, what, 52? One person a week, 52 weeks in a year? So 52 times 300, we did that, that's 109,500 just in maintenance that we would be making. Everybody got quiet. Right, it'll be a maintenance fee, but it's $300 per person for that week, but we would be making $109,500 a year for maintenance. So that would, we could take the cleaning out of that. We could take the upkeep out of that, because we shouldn't be paying that much for cleaning. Right, right. So, I mean, we could, yeah, we could, I mean, it could go toward a lot of different things, but $109,000, if we did timeshare and we said it's $300 maintenance fee a year, or we say 500, I mean, we're just going to be making, what, that much more? And we don't have to use, and the thing about it is, you're not going to update the furniture every year. So you might update the furniture every 7 years. But then we'd have to look at, and we'd have to put money aside, because we would really have to find out what the wear and tear is on everything. You know, the dome may be supposed to last 20 years, but maybe it's only lasting 15 or 13 before we really have to, what, replace the fabric, which didn't cost us much. But it would still need to be, what, done. So you would, while that's being done, and you would lose the income for that particular tent. But it should be able to be done within, I would say, 2 days max. So, yeah, I can see that. So, yeah, we'll look at pricing, and then we'll look at what makes sense. As long as we're making money, we don't have to get everything that the industry is getting. As long as we're making good money off it, or we would consider good money, we have to be, what, happy with it. And some things, sometimes you don't know what you're supposed to charge for something after you start doing it. But if it's covering whatever, if we look at just the renting of the dome itself, if we look at the renting of it as making us X amount and we're happy with that, then if we're saying another 500 a year, per 500 a year per week per renter or investor or timeshare, then that's extra money on top of that that we can just say, okay, out of the maintenance fee, we can pay for a clean crew, you can pay for and put somewhat back. You can pay for maintenance, somebody that's going to be responsible for maintenance, and then I still don't think that we will be spending, especially the newer the units are, the less we should be having to spend on maintenance in the beginning. But in the latter years, we might have to spend more. As far as, you know, replacing things, you know, it probably go toward when things get broken. And replacement and that type of stuff, but it makes sense. What we would do with it, it makes sense. So we'll look at, I'll go out and see, Sister Denise, didn't you have an assignment? Didn't you have an assignment from the week before? Did you do it? Well, let's hear about it. I don't want you to feel like I gave you an assignment that we just blew over.
I didn't feel like that.
Sister Mary, you still taking notes?
Huh?
All right. What the heck are they paying for $3,000 a night? Oh, wait a minute. Because you're looking at a house or something for $2,000. You got the link for that? Yeah, if you go to quote, I'm going to need the link, but I'm going to have to go look at it. So
how did you decide to get a smoke tower $300 a night?
If they were going to pay for a month,
right.
Yeah, the time share doesn't work like that. Oh, hold on, because we're going past the time. Let me end this online. We can continue.